has been looked as if the child who will kill him is in the womb, because everyone can see the radiance in her body due to the presence of the Supreme Lord. So these are his thoughts. Should I kill her or not kill her? So here he more or less concludes, if he will not kill her because people will criticize and he will get a bad reputation now while he's living and after his death. And, of course, also if he is cruel, then he'll go to some hellish planet for punishment. So his thought is simply self-centered. The reason he will not kill is because people will criticize and he will go to hell. So it is not because the act itself is cruel or not cruel as such. There's some sort of social condemnation and he gets ill fame or bad reputation by doing cruel acts. So therefore, he should refrain from this, at least publicly. In one sense, of course, we can say he has some sort of idea about dharma and afterlife and hellish punishment, etc. But it is all rather useful for his own purposes. Whenever he needs to, he will use these type of arguments or whatever for his own benefit. So in this case, simply to respect his reputation and avoid hellish life or whatever, he will refrain from killing Devaki. If the hellish punishment was not there, people didn't criticize, then of course he would kill. This in no way shows good quality in Kamsa. He's completely evil by nature, and he simply uses principles which are found in the Dharma scriptures for his own purposes and whenever he needs to. So, in this case, of course, he refrained because mainly reputation. People will criticize. So, this, of course, is beneficial for the appearance of the Supreme Lord. However, even if he does decide to kill the Devaki or whatever, the Lord has his own arrangements by which he could prevent such things, and he could be saved in any case. Because the Lord cannot be killed. His whole purpose is to kill the Lord or make sure that the person is born. But the will of the Lord is much stronger, so no matter what Kamsa does, he cannot thwart the will of the Supreme Lord. So we see that that's actually what happened. He concluded, well, I will wait for the child to be born, then I'll kill the child. So that was also thwarted by the will of the Supreme Lord. The children were switched by some mysterious means that no one could figure out. And Kamsa didn't know that. And then he tried to kill the other child, and he could not do that either. And then he understood maybe Krishna's in Vrindavan and he sent many demons there, and he could not kill him there also. So finally, he devised a plan. I will bring him to Mathura, and there I'll have the wrestlers kill him. Or whatever, like, let's get it, my demons in Mathura kill him. And he tried that, also didn't happen. Instead, Krishna killed Kamsa. So, no matter how, by what means, Kamsa endeavors to kill the Supreme Lord, it is not possible. Certainly, he can kill other people, normal people in the material world. It's not possible to kill the Supreme Lord at all because he doesn't have a material body. Yeah? Just as we cannot kill the Atma, though we can kill the body, so to speak, we cannot kill the Atma of an individual. Yeah? The Supreme Lord's body cannot be killed because it is spiritual, part of his Atma. So, his very self is spiritual and his body is spiritual. So one cannot kill the Lord at all in any case, by any means. However, the foolishness of Kamsa is he thinks he can do that because he thinks Supreme Lord is an ordinary person with a material body. So as everyone else can be killed, he can also be killed. So So he doesn't think of Supreme Lord as a Supreme Lord with a spiritual body. He thinks of an ordinary living entity. And therefore, think, oh, he can be killed. So he'll go out throughout many ways of trying to kill the Lord because of that, his misconception of the Supreme Lord. He has extreme hatred of Vishnu. Not because he is supreme, but simply because he thinks he is another person like him, and he can try to kill him. Since he was killed by Supreme Lord previously, now he thinks, I will try to kill the Supreme Lord. So he doesn't recognize him as Supreme Lord. He thinks, yes, Vishnu is there, and people may call him the Supreme Lord, but actually he is nothing other than another human being. Therefore, I will attempt to kill him. So this attempt, of course, is foolish. But because he is demoniac and doesn't accept the position of the Supreme Lord, then he continues to attempt to kill the Supreme Lord. So this has gone on for several lifetimes. Previously, he was Kalanami, and he had hatred of the Lord also, and he was killed by the Lord. So now he's thinking this Vishnu was here again, and this time I will kill him. So, though the Lord appears within the material world, and he manifests his powers to different people, and his wonderful, attractive nature, the demon does not appreciate it. So Kamsa cannot appreciate the wonderful qualities of the Supreme Lord, even though he can see the Supreme Lord. So when Krishna comes into the arena of Kamsa, he can see Krishna, but he does not appreciate his wonderful qualities that the devotees appreciate. Instead, he thinks of him as an ordinary person. So this is material vision. So one who has this material vision has the misfortune of not being able to perceive the Lord, even if the Lord is present. So sometimes people will say, well, if the Lord exists, then he should show himself to me. But even if the Lord shows himself to somebody and he has material eyes, then he will say, that's not the Supreme Lord. So what is the use of the Lord manifesting himself? He may not see anything at all, in fact. So Krishna actually showed himself as the universal form to Duryodhana. And Duryodhana saw that form, and then he thought, Krishna, he is simply Vishnu, and he's making us some illusion like a magician, and therefore we should not give him any respect at all. So though he revealed the universal form and everyone else was struck with wonder, Duryodhana thought, oh, no, he's just doing some magic trick like a magician. So the Lord can do many things to manifest his powers, his qualities, his beauty, etc. But the demon will not appreciate that at all, in spite of that. So the Lord, his main purpose is not to come to the world to attract the demons, because they cannot see him. So his main aspect is to attract the devotees. The devotees get an opportunity to see the Lord and to relish the Lord's wonderful form, qualities, and activities. So that's his main purpose. However, the Lord is very intelligent, and with one action he's able to accomplish many things. So by his appearance within the material world, yes, he gives joy to the devotees, and of course he comes to destroy Adharma, to kill the demons, etc. That's one of his purposes. And of course, this is what the Devatas prayed for. They wanted Kamsa killed, eliminated, because he was obstructing the process of Dharma. So that's a secondary purpose of the Supreme Lord. So he did that, and he does in his pastimes as well. But when he does this, he also does this in an extraordinary way. When he comes as Krishna, kills the demons, but he gives him great benefit that no one can imagine. So when Krishna killed Agasura, then the Atma within Agasura came out of the body and then emerged into Krishna. Later it's explained that actually he got a form in the spiritual world. So when the devatas saw this, they began praising the Supreme Krishna. Oh, he's done something remarkable because he's allowed that demon to merge into himself. Now, Prabhupada quotes here how the demons go to hell due to sinful activities. Due to that, they get karma, and the karma pushes them into lower and lower bodies until they become animals or plants or whatever, or go to hellish planets. So, due to the law of karma, generally the demons get lower and lower births. But when the Supreme Lord kills a demon, the opposite happens. Now he kills the demon, so then everybody is satisfied, but he also gives some benediction to the demon. So in the case of Krishna, the demon can get liberation or spiritual world. So this is very extraordinary. And that is why the devatas were praising Supreme Lord Krishna. He's such a wonderful act. The sages were praising. And then Brahma heard this. Ooh, how is it that, what is this noise? Everyone is praising the Lord. He came to see Krishna at that time. This is a extraordinary feature of the Supreme Lord as Krishna, that when he kills demons, they get liberation, they go to the spiritual world. Not just, like other forms of the Lord killing demons. When they do, yes, they get some material advantage usually. They can go to Svarga Loka or enjoy nicely on earth or whatever. They don't go to hell also. So that's the normal quality of a form of the Lord. He gives benedictions to those demons he kills. But when Krishna does it, extraordinary benedictions. Even the so-called inauspicious actions of the Supreme Lord in killing somebody ends up as greatly beneficial for the person. They get great, great results. So no one can actually criticize the Supreme Lord. So when Nrsimhadev kills Hiranyakasipu, that can also not be criticized because he got birth as Ravana and he enjoyed very nicely. And when Rama killed Ravana, again, he became Shishupal and enjoyed very nicely. So one cannot criticize the Lord for his acts, even though they may also seem to be cruel. So here comes this word of worried about the fact everybody will think I'm cruel, etc. when I kill the Devaki with the child in her womb, so I won't do it. So similarly, people could criticize the Lord for killing demons. Why does he just imprison them, or why does he do this or that? But he kills them. He chopped off Shishupal's head with his Sudarshan Chakra. And I said, oh, how cruel. But we see the result is very good. He goes to the spiritual world. So no one can criticize the Lord. So even his acts of violence or whatever have great benefit and they become all auspicious. So what is seemingly fault in the Supreme Lord actually becomes good quality. Everything becomes resolved in something positive. So that is the nature of the Supreme Lord. So in the material world, we have good and bad qualities. And you criticize the bad qualities, especially if you are under, if you understand Dharma. From that, we understand what is a good action, a bad action, etc. So therefore, we'll criticize people who do the bad actions and say they are a dharmic or whatever. Using these standards of scripture. Even if we do not have the standards of scripture, there are general principles in human life. So we see that in general, killing is not considered to be good, especially killing human beings. So they don't. We refrain from killing human beings as much as possible. And there's circumstances under which it is allowed. but in general, people avoid that. In the Vedic system, with the dharmic laws, then everything is specified greatly in detail. So, yes, people should be protected, violence should not be committed, and then it will give the instances where violence is justified as well. If someone attacks you without any reason, if somebody sets fire to your house, you can defend yourself, etc. So there are particular circumstances under which you can respond to other person's violence, etc. And it's not criticized at all. But if it goes beyond that, it's not one of these exceptional cases, then one is criticized. So most of the sins that result from the bad activities or the criticized activities will involve some sort of unnecessary violence. And the result of that is we get karma. Whatever pain we inflict on other living entities, we get that back on ourselves in a future life. That is the basic law. And of course, as I said, exceptions are there, defined in the scriptures itself. So, therefore, the Dharma really defines what is papa and what is punya. It encourages people to do the punya and avoid the papa, so that, in terms of next life, they get enjoyment, not suffering. So that is the impetus for doing these acts. So that is similar here to Kamsa. I shouldn't kill her and do a cruel act because instead of getting good life, I will get pain, I will get suffering, I'll have to go to hellish planet, etc. That's so that is the we can say the negative impetus to do dharma is the punishment for not doing dharma. That, of course, is not the we can say the ideal situation, that we simply avoid sin because of the punishment. And if there were no punishment, we would do the sin. We would do the violent activity. That should not be the real purpose. So as one progresses through the gunas, the sattva guna, then the impetus is no longer fear of punishment. In the lower gunas, yes, because of lack of intelligence, there is fear involved. And also the government will have fear. And if you do this, you get this punishment, etc. As one gets to sattva-gun, the impetus is quite different. And the reason is that one has detachment from the material body. So his tendency to commit sinful activities for his own sense enjoyment is much, much less. So therefore, that impetus to do the sinful activity is not there. So he follows dharma. He should do this, not do this, not because he gets hellish punishment or heavenly pleasure, but simply because scripture tells me to do it. He has faith in scripture, and he follows that, not because of these impetuses of rewards and punishments. So that is a higher position. And of course, this ends up with the karma yoga becomes nishkama at that point. He's able to do nishkama karma yoga. If the person becomes fixed in such a position, then generally he will end up with progressing to another yoga, jnana yoga, in which he understands he's not the body at all. And your atma. And then we start giving up activities completely in the material world, including the karma yoga activities. So that's a higher type realization after one gets to sattva guna. So we cannot expect a person like Kamsa to be free from desires. And so whatever he has knowledge of, he will definitely be motivated by punishment or reward or whatever. Even that, of course, is quite superficial for him because he doesn't really believe in the, you know, following the laws of Dharma at all. But definitely, he does not want a bad future. So therefore, he will utilize this concept of, okay, you do sinful activities, violent activities, you have to suffer, so I won't do this thing. So to that extent, he has some acceptance of the laws of Dharma or whatever. But quite superficial. So generally, the people who are in the Varnashram system will follow and those laws because of enforcement of the laws by the kings. And the people in the lower modes must, this is the impetus. If they don't follow the laws, then one, you get the punishment of the afterlife or whatever. But the direct thing is, you don't follow the laws, then the government will punish you. The government has laws, and you don't follow the laws, then you can get punishment that way. So for people in the lower modes, that is the way in which Dharma is enforced. For the Brahmanas, on the other hand, it doesn't have to be enforced, so therefore the Kshatriya has less authority over the Brahmanas, or rather he is the servant of the Brahmanas for that reason, because they don't have to be forced to do anything because they naturally follow Dharma. And so they advise the king on how to institute Dharma for the other people. So if the king is qualified as being an authorized descendant from Manu's line, etc., and is knowledgeable of Dharma and is a devotee of the Supreme Lord, then that system works very nicely because the enforcer himself is following, not for superficial reasons, but he has a very deep understanding of the whole nature of material world, and he also understands you're not the body, etc. So he has some, his motivation is not the same. If the king is unqualified, of course, and he then his implementation of these laws will be faulty in all cases. And he will utilize the rules for his own purposes, not for the ultimate good of everyone. He himself will also have a faulty understanding of the nature of these laws and how they work and what their purpose is. So that is, of course, the case of Kamsa. So he's ruler. Whatever is suitable to him, he will do. And whatever part of Dharma is going to help him maintain his position, he will cite that just to get support from everyone else. But mainly he's interested in his own life. So the word tanu manino, those who are identifying with their own body, is used here. So this is a nice description of Kamsa. Though here Kamsa is speaking in general about people who are identifying with the body and they do sinful activities and they go to hell. Actually, he is an example of this. He is a person who identifies completely with his material body. And he fears that Vishnu will try to kill him, so therefore he wants to kill Vishnu. So he is talking on this level of people like who identify with the body, go to hellish existence, etc. He's exactly this type of person as well. And that is his, because of this, all of his activities become distorted and adharmic.
They are still suffering. So how do we make others understand why Krishna is biased towards demon also?
by somewhat sense?
Like in the sense that it is then the liberation of Guru Vishnu Loka, the big body, uh-huh. The normal public who is neutral,
yeah.
Is neither affected nor but
oh, still. Yeah. So the neutral people, they also get advantage. They're not, this is of course when the Lord appears as avatar and they can see him or take advantage of his presence. They are neutral, they're not devotees, so they don't join the Lord in his pastimes directly. But because they're not opposed to the Lord, by exposure to the Lord, they can begin to become attracted eventually. So we see, of course, when Krishna was present, then the general population, we can say, is they're not great devotees, but they're somewhat favorable. So we have the whole populations of cities or whatever when Krishna went from one place to the other, like the Mithila or this place or that place. Then the people on the road would see Krishna and they would offer their respects, etc. So that contact with Supreme Lord is very, very beneficial for these people also. They can advance from that position of a general respect or whatever to higher levels through that, depending on their own level of development, then they can progress quickly towards the Supreme Lord. So those who are neutral, they don't hate the Lord or like the Lord. By exposure to the Lord, then they can also eventually take to the process of bhakti and worship the Lord.
Here we see Kamsa is avoiding simple activities because it's repetition. You see, in modern world,
most people don't even think about it. They don't even think that is Kamsa is better. They just commit all these activities. People also start thinking, if I do any activities, I'll be landing in jail and my reputation will go.
Yeah.
Most of the problems will be solved.
Well, this is a particular case, but then later we see that what does Kamsa do? He sends demon after demon after demon to Vrindavan to try to kill Krishna. Krishna, he sends Putana there to kill all the children because one of them might be. So he doesn't seem to be so concerned about whether he does cruel acts or not. This is one little instance, but he's just justifying for himself in this way. But he doesn't really mean it. He's not.
That means he's changing his attitude. Today he's thinking that I should not lose my reputation.
Yeah,
tomorrow he's killing the children and he may go to hell for that.
Fickle-minded. But he'll just use any excuse for doing whatever he wants. So in this case he uses, okay, I won't kill her. And this is an excuse, okay. But then we see he doesn't really care about public reputation anyway because he goes out and tries to kill Krishna through these different demons, including Putana, which will give him a bad reputation also.
Why is he not coming directly to kill her? Why is he sending all the followers like covered in the back?
Well, we can say that is an aspect of his, superficial idea to keep his reputation. I will not get blamed. We can blame the demons instead. I'll send my demons and they'll get blamed if anything happens.
Which means he had a spiritual eye, right?
No. He thought, oh, this is nothing. It's a trick of Krishna. That's all. So he didn't appreciate it.
But Krishna says to Arjuna that you cannot, with your current eye, you cannot see my universal form, and hence I'll give you a spiritual eye.
Well, he says Divya Chakshu. But Vishnu Chakravarti says that's not a spiritual eye, that's an inferior eye. You've got an eye like a devata to see. Actually, you see my spiritual form already. So to see the universal form, which is an inferior form, you need a Divya Chakshu, which is a devata eye. So he degraded his vision to be like a devata eye and appreciate the universal form that way. Because it's a material vision of material elements. So that's a lesser vision. It's not spiritual form, actually.
Or maybe showing it to make Surya more angry so that he can have more desha to Lord and Lord can kill him a bit.
Yeah. Well, of course, it obviously illustrates the complete asuric nature of Duryodhana. He could not appreciate that form at all. Others could appreciate it. He could not appreciate it. He says that Krishna's a cheater. So he could not appreciate the Lord. And that's evidence that, therefore, he was qualified to get killed.
Once you said that once, Krishna killed Agasura, he got the special body in the spiritual world. So, how is it possible that because he didn't do any sadhana, normally to get the spiritual body, need some sadhana and to develop that body from the by sadhana only. But
yeah.
this is a
particular quality of Krishna, not the other forms. So, I suppose we can say the special quality of Agasura is Krishna went inside him and he got touched by him or whatever. Yeah? In that way, he got some special mercy of being touched by the Supreme Lord, and not only the Supreme Lord, but Krishna. So that was able not only to purify him, but to give him a higher, let's say, prema, whatever.
Or can we say that all these asuras, they were helping the Lord's pastimes, so Lord is helping them, because he is just tinkling the mellows, all the demons he's killing, he's giving back their shelter. Like a businessman, he may use his workers to do some mischief, but he's just protecting them.
Well, some demons are devotees of the Lord. They take that role like Jaya and Vijaya for three lives, but the normal demons aren't. They're not under yoga maya or something. They're actually demons. So that's why the Lord comes in the material world to kill these demons like Kamsar or anything like that. Yeah? But the Lord benefits everybody, as I say. So and when Krishna comes, he gives extraordinary benefit to them. So they get liberation or they go to the spiritual world.
So will it not make some of the asuric mentality of people to follow Kamsa?
Some people may follow Krishna's divine thing. There are some cases, they may even follow. I should also be like Kamsa to kill, and anyway, Lord will come and kill me and I'll get... So this is encouraging people to do more simple activities in certain cases.
Well, the whole point, of course, is that this is an extraordinary case of Krishna when he comes as avatar. So it's not a normal case when you're simply in the material world, because Krishna doesn't come except once in the day of Brahma. And you cannot predict if you're going to be born when Krishna comes and associate with Krishna and get killed by Krishna. You can't predict that at all. So these are extraordinary cases, so we can't use the excuse that because Kamsa got killed and got liberation, therefore I will get killed by the Lord and get liberation. We can't make that choice at all.
Maharaj, is that we keep just bhoga in front of Krishna, we prepare some bhoga and we just keep it in front of Krishna and we take it maybe after a few minutes. We prepare some bhoga and we keep it in front of Krishna and we take it after a few minutes. Does it really become prasadam?
Well, if it isn't, then what is it?
Yeah. To be more specific, like Krishna says, offer me with love. So that's about, during the preparation, maybe one has to be very pure in terms of their mind. About, you know, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, offer me with love.
Yeah.
All right. So whatever bhoga we prepare and we offer to the Lord, it should be with love. Yeah. So if it isn't the case, what would happen to that bhoga?
Yeah.
And mostly if we see people in these...
So that would be the case of a person who's not even a devotee. Why would they offer to the Lord at all if they're not a devotee? They would just eat it, wouldn't they? So the very act of offering to the Lord implies that they do have some faith. Unless they're trying to poison the Lord and put poison in the food or something like that. But if they're going to offer something to the Lord, a flower or something, that means they do have at least a little bit of faith in the Lord. Otherwise, they wouldn't offer at all. So that, we can say, is a little bit of devotion or whatever. But according to the devotion, the Lord responds.
Mm-hmm. So if faith is there, that
he is
going to take
that.
So
if
that faith is not there,
then
the company of
money. When there is a major ceremony of sorts, like when there will be many non-devotees during a major ceremony, there will be many non-devotees who are preparing the prasad, Maharaj, and we offer it to Krishna.
Generally, then, we only have devotees preparing. We don't have non-devotees preparing.
So what happens if there are in such situations?
Well, at least the offering should be done by devotees.
Okay.
I think Prabhupada said we can offer milk sweets and fruits, not the grains.
Thank you. ಉಳ್ಕೊಂಡು ಅಲ್ಲಿ ಎನರ್ಜಿ ಒಂದು ನೋಡಿ ಗೇರ್ ರೆಡಿ ನೀವು ಆಫರ್ ಪಡೆದ ಕೂಡ ಪ್ರಶಾಂತ ಆಫರ್ ಹೇಳ್ತೀನಿ ಚಾರ್ಜ್
ಇಷ್ಟು